Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Elder Dragon Turtle Podcast. This is me, your host Igor, and with me is...
Miksha.
This would be the episode 3 if not for the MP3 Skype recorder that decided not to record our episode last week. So I guess this is the episode 2.
2.5, let's call it.
Electric Boogaloo or something like that. So we have a huge spoiler week ahead of us, actually behind us.
Which we covered, but apparently we did not.
But we didn't, yeah. We're recording this on St. Patrick's Day, so happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody, I guess.
Yay.
And let's just slowly walk in with our commanders of the week. What's yours?
Well, I recently remade my Zedru the Greathearted deck. But this time it's not so greathearted because, you know, last time I played it, I played cards like Celestial Dawn that was really fun to donate to people.
Yeah, fun. And, let's go with that.
Yeah, and my Steel Golem. You know, people would just love me when I donate a 3-4 guy to them. You know, it was fun. Even a Rust Elementor or a Bronze Bombshell. Yes, have all my guys.
So why did you remake it?
Well, I just had a niche. I wanted to be nice to people. So I just decided to remake it, but this time less of those cards because I kind of got rid of them.
Aww.
But I still have Illusions of Grandeur, and that's going to be really fun.
So what is the current shtick of the deck?
Well, my strategy is to be nice to people in the beginning, give them my mana-producing artifacts, maybe a land or two, you know, a pacifism maybe. And when they, you know, start seeing that I draw cards and they start hating me, then I become Zedru the Wrathful Monk, Minotaur Monk of Hell, and I unleash my Flight of Angels to smite down everyone.
Especially Goblin players.
Everyone is sinful.
As we've seen the spoilers, yes.
Everyone gets to be burned down.
And it gets to be a miracle, right?
Yeah. If it happens, then everybody will especially be burned down.
So yeah, I didn't manage to actually see that whole team last game we played, sadly.
The deck still needs some works.
At least I got to entry the angels for like 8 angels, so that was nice.
Yeah. Then I also managed to not draw my Rhymewind Cryomancer, because, you know, it sounds like a really good card countering abilities. And then I just put the Joyful in my deck. Yeah, this guy's going to be awesome, nobody expects him. Her. And then once I played the card, I realized I actually have no snow-covered lands, just full art lands, and that almost sucked.
Couldn't you then play Void Mage Husher or something like that?
That's not cool.
That's actually more cool because it has flash, and you can bounce.
No, this one actually turned out really great because I managed to donate it to somebody who had basic snowlands, so he used the ability to counter other people's abilities. So it turned out just fine! Why do you ask?
But you should really get some snow-covered lands, shouldn't you?
But they're not full art!
You can, I guess, alter them?
If I'm the one doing the alter, I don't really trust myself, no. An alter's an alter.
An alter's an alter, yes. And I'll move out to my Commander of the Week. That's again my sweet Alicia deck, because I really enjoy that deck. I've steered away from it for a week or two since I was doing the Cedrus list.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to go back to Alicia because I got some couple of nice things for her, and she's really, really fun to play. And she's actually doing something from the turn one, unlike the Cedrus deck.
Turning guys sideways is always fun.
Yeah, so I got Mother Rune, Sunforger, and Alien. I got Jaya, Boros Signet, and Godsend out. Those are the changes, and they seem to be working out alright. Sunforger did a lot of work in the past couple of games that I played them.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out getting instant speed removal just like that is fun.
Yes.
Also, swinging for like 7-8 damage with your commander is also fun.
I bet it is. I don't really play commanders that swing for massive damage, except Phage, because she swings for 21 commander damage every time.
60% of the time.
Yes.
I mean, Alicia.
But that's
about
it.
Alicia isn't built to swing for huge damage. But that's a plan B that I have. Usually I just go for the reanimation slash good stuff route, but also have an equipment package in just when you don't have a graveyard, let's say, because somebody exiled it or something like that. You can still swing for like 8, 10, 15 damage.
Yeah, also Sunforger works really well with that Toll Collector from Oath of the Gatewatch.
Yeah, it's really good with him.
Yeah, zero mana equip on Sunforger is really nifty.
If I had a bigger equipment team, I would totally get that card, but it's not doing anything in Alicia build, so...
Yeah, pretty much not.
The all-star of the equipment is still the Caldera package, so...
Mm-hmm.
Because you can always sec the token, get a new token, sec a new the token and all that.
Yeah, like... Second to deal its power to players, right?
Yeah, with my good friend Mr. Chuck. AKA, I can't remember his name.
So we're going to call him Mr. Chuck because he chucks...
Guys, yeah.
He chucks guys.
You know him. Two red and white for a 4-4. He swings creatures that...
Brian Stoutarm.
Brian Stoutarm, god damn it. I usually can remember cards pretty well, and I just blanked. I'm ashamed of myself.
Derp.
Derp, derp. So we had a thing last week where we decided to actually present ourselves a bit more intimate to our audience, all three of you. Basically to say who we are using the colors of Magic in pairs of monocolor, two colors, and three colors. So, since you began with the last segment, I'll do this one first.
Well, for a mono color, I can't really pick a color for me, because... I mean, I would probably say green, because I like big cards. You know, the more mana cost, the more power, it's better. But then again, I could also say that I'm really passionate about the game and about the story and everything regarding it, so that would put me, like, in red. And also, I'm kind of a wild deck builder. Wild. Not good, just wild. So that also puts me in red, kind of. So it's easier for me to put myself in a two-color identity because we have the Guilds of Ravnica, which are one of the best things to happen to Magic.
Yep.
And I would identify myself as an Izzet because I have a deck idea. I try to make it, substitute any cards I have with... other cards just to try them out for science and see how they work.
And
they work out great. Experiment successful. If they do not, oh well, you just try to find something else and go with it. And for the tricolor, I'm going to say Animar colors. That's Teemer.
Teemer, yeah.
Because it encompasses both big stompy dudes and wild, uncontrolled madness.
So why aren't you actually playing Riku of the Two Mirrors?
Because I did some really bad things with him, and I don't want to do that to people again.
Still, the thing with Riku is that he's really versatile, so you can make him anything you want, actually. And that seems like a kind of that would actually suit you.
Yes, but there's also a problem that I got rid of Riku. Yeah, I know. It's your favorite color. How come you're not playing it?
I was actually going to say I have one back in home, so when I go back to Osek to do some things, I can get you one?
No, that's okay, because I tried to limit my number of commander decks because, you know, my wallet can't really take it.
You can make anything with Riku. You can even make a Pauper EDH deck, so you know. That could actually be a good deck building challenge for you.
Huh. Make a Pauper?
Yeah, EDH deck.
Riku that can not lose instantly. Okay, I might try that. Yeah.
So I'm going back in a couple of weeks, so I'll bring it to you.
I'll just proxy it by then.
Yeah, but you know, it's always better to have the original.
Of course.
So, let's do me now.
I'd rather not.
Look, you signed the contract when you started this podcast with me, so you know. Come on, tears will dry up. Nightmares won't, but you know. So,
do go on.
So monocolored. I vision myself mostly as blue because I really cherish intellect and thinking and pondering about things, and I'm usually a bit inactive in life, so you know, passivity is okay with me. Drogo isn't too boring for me. For two colors, there is just one guild I can associate with, and that's the Dimir. The one that they claim that doesn't exist and all that. Because I've always been drawn to all those sneaky mill strategies that actually require much more work than just a regular, normal deck. Especially in EDH.
Yeah, where you have to mill a lot more stuff.
That's why my Dimir deck actually focuses more on infinite combos than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like Mindcrank and stuff. Either that or just getting everybody's good creatures under my control, because I don't have good cards. Other people do.
Yeah, so you just use their good cards.
Well, it's
brilliant.
But actually, therefore, they were willing to spend money on good cards, so you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm basically teaching him to play budget. If they weren't playing good spells, they wouldn't have that huge Crater of Behemoth striking them.
Yeah, that reminds me of something, but you finish your...
And for the three-colored pair, I have to go with Grixis, because it's the combination of my one and two-colored pairs, plus I do have that sometimes wild and uncontrollable side of the red.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to experiment and just do things with the feeling sometimes. So yeah, those are my pairs and I guess all that. So you were going to say some story?
Yeah, not really a story, but just... I used to have a Super Friends commander. Five color, of course. Progenitus all the way. Oh, wait, I just lost my train of thought.
You kind of did. You were going to say Super Friends story.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And I was getting briberied a lot.
Yeah?
All my creatures in my deck just got bribed and they smashed me and killed me. So, at one point I just almost stopped playing creatures completely. Just replaced them with more mass removals. That worked out fine, except it was boring.
It's Super Friends. I mostly find Super Friends deck to be boring, both for controller and the people who are playing against it.
Huh. No, for the controller, it can be really fun. Just placing counters, oh yeah, placing counters.
Placing counters, making decisions, what are you going to use at which time and all that.
Especially the placing counters part, oh yeah.
Yeah.
With all those counters, especially with doubling season, yeah.
All
the counters.
At least you don't have problem with doubling season, because most of the time you just ultimate the planeswalker and you're done with it.
Yeah. But also...
Yeah.
Some of the spoilers just told me that it was a good decision to stop playing Super Friends.
Oh, really? How come?
Well, to do that, we can start discussing the spoilers.
Okay, you started. Just pick any card you like that's been spoiled in the last 2 weeks.
So that's exactly, yeah, yeah.
You know what's the difference between a podcaster and a radio host?
No.
Radio hosts do segues, podcasters make a segue and they talk about the good segue they did.
Oh.
That's a huge difference.
Okay, so the spoiler I was referring to is To the Slaughter.
And
what To the Slaughter does, it's a 2 generic and 1 black instant that says target player sacrifices a creature or planeswalker. But for Delirium... So, meaning if you have 4 or more card types among cards in your graveyard, instead that player sacrifices a creature and a planeswalker. Which would actually hurt me a lot, because I have very few creatures, and those creatures that I do have are very valuable to me. So losing a creature and a planeswalker is just really, really bad for me.
Yeah, this is a good removal either way you look at it, because it's an instant sacrifice effect.
Yeah, it's an edict.
Yeah.
And it can kill planeswalkers.
And it's a target player who has to sacrifice it, so you can always target yourself if you need something in your graveyard.
Yeah. If you have a Tamio emblem and really want something back in your hand.
Yeah, something like that. This is a really good removal. And the art is really, really creepy.
Oh yeah, the poor little lamb.
What lamb?
All soon not so existing.
Well, I bet it was tasty, so you know. Let's talk something else. Our good friend Arlene Cord has been spoiled.
Oh, good friend. Yeah, she'll be a good friend.
She'll be a good friend in any red-green X deck. So, she's a Planeswalker Arlene for 2 red and a green. She has 3 loyalty when she comes into play, and her abilities are... +1 until the end of turn, up to 1 target creature gets +2/+2 and gains vigilance and haste. This is already good. For 0, you put a 2/2 green wolf creature token onto battlefield and you transform her. So she can protect herself really good. This is already quite nice.
Yes.
Then
she transforms.
Yep. What does she do?
Well, once she transforms, she's still a planeswalker. And she gets 3 new abilities. So, and for +1, you give your creatures +1/+1 and trample until end of turn.
That's so good.
It's a mini overrun, and what's not to like about that? For -1, she deals 3 damage to target creature or player, and transforms. That's a bolt, and that's really good. And for -6, you get an emblem with creatures you control have haste, and you can tap them to have this creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player. Meaning they don't have to attack ever.
Because why should they?
Because they attack on tapping.
Yep, you just block and tap in response to kill that player.
Or they can just gang up by tapping and killing something without being threatened, ever. Yeah. It's just it's not a game-ending ultimate that just says you win the game on, like, some other planeswalkers, but this one just locks down the game for the player with the emblem.
And it makes sense that the werewolf should have an ultimate like this.
Yeah, where all of her creatures now can gang up on some other creatures.
Yeah, just but
amazing.
You never focus on the ultimate, on Planeswalkers, though. What is the mode that will be most often used in your mind?
Well, since all of her abilities are actually really good, I see both modes used quite equally.
What, the bolt and the plus one, or which one? On which side are you talking?
I'm talking about both sides. Both plus ones are amazing.
Yeah, they are.
The bolt is really good. The zero just puts a guy on the board. If after a sweeper, you just get more guys then.
Yeah, I still love the plus one on the werewolf side.
For a mini overrun, yeah.
If it just gave trample, I would be like, okay, I can work with that.
But it gives
plus one. Plus one, that's really good.
So you have favorable trades and trample damage.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's just... It's an amazing card.
Sadly, she'll be a standard playable card.
Aww.
So my wallet is going to suffer a bit. Although, I will be working by the time she's standard legal for a while, so I might get her? Now, the problem is, in which deck do I actually play her? Because the only red-green X deck I have is the Prosh one, and that's not the one I use, so, you know.
But she's really good in Prosh. Because suddenly making your kobolds are attacking, and that's suddenly scary. That's like...
Yeah. There's actually a couple more cards that are really good with Prosh in this spoiler, but we'll get to those later. Shall we move on to another Planeswalker?
Oh, yeah. There are quite a few Planeswalkers this time.
Let's go chronologically, actually. Next one that was spoiled was Nahiri.
Actually, Nahiri was before, but whatever.
They were about the same time, so you know.
Okay, yeah, sure. Nahiri. What does she do?
Nahiri the Harbinger, for 2 red and white with 4 loyalty, she's a Planeswalker Nahiri. She's a cool guy because she doesn't look at explosions. And for plus 2, you may discard a card. If you do, draw a card. Okay, if it just said this, it's okay. It's good. It's a Boros Planeswalker that gets you cards.
Cycles cards.
In a red and a white, you're really hard-pressed for a card draw, so this is really good.
Yes.
You can work with this.
Mm-hmm.
For -2, exile target enchantment, tapped artifact or tapped creature. Removal is nice. Exile removal is even better.
Yeah, but you could consider it a weakness because it needs to be tapped unless it's an enchantment, but still, in those in white, it's really not a problem to tap.
Plus, this is a multiplayer format. Somebody attacks somebody with that huge creature, you just play Nahiri and oh, it's gone.
Yeah. That's a decent ability.
And for -8, search your library for a huge Eldrazi and put it into play. Okay. Search your library for an artifact or creature card, put it onto the battlefield, and shuffle your library. It gains haste. Return it to your hand at the beginning of the next end step.
So, yeah, basically just search your deck for an Eldrazi or Blightsteel Colossus.
Win the game and return it to the hand, basically.
And on to the next player.
Yeah, and it's really nice if you have enter the battlefield effects and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It attacks effects and things like that. However, it's an ultimate, so you're really not focusing on that. Although she can get to the ultimate really fast, actually.
Yeah, she starts with 4, and she pluses for 2.
But you might just be plusing 2 the whole game while you have her.
Yes.
And you'd be really happy.
You'd be fine with it.
I wouldn't mind having this in my Alicia deck, actually. Oh no, I'll discard a creature and draw a card. Oh well. I wouldn't even focus on the ultimate that much in the Alicia deck.
Yeah, because it really requires a really big finisher for it to really shine.
I mean, I can always get an offense at the white one or Murderous Ratcap and just starting infinite comboing.
That's
a thing. But
it is certainly a thing.
This is a planeswalker that Boros EDH players really wanted. Because there's
Other Boros walker was Ayani Vengeant.
He's good.
So more planeswalkers is more fun.
Yeah, but Boros is the weakest of the two color pairs in EDH, so...
Well, I'm sure that Boros players would kind of disagree with you.
I doubt it. I know a guy, Calvin, from the CommanderCast podcast. He's a really huge Boros player, and even he's like, yeah, they're bad. The Boros is the worst of the tank two-color pairs. But you can still play it, I mean...
Yeah, because, I mean, Boros just seems to be... like an aggro deck, almost always.
Yeah, now I'm going to go on a little tangent besides the Nahiri, but the problem with Boros is that what are red and white good at in Commander? Burning things and turning ice sideways. Which isn't the best strategy in EDH, when you have three other players, let's say, to kill. And yeah, the other
many targets.
Yeah, and other thing that they're good at is land destruction, and people don't like land destruction.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. But if Wizards continue supporting Boros with things like this, that might change a bit.
Yeah, so a bit more utility.
Yeah, they need utility and card draw. And this is certainly giving it.
In a good way, yeah.
In a good way, yeah. So, choose another Planeswalker.
Well, the next we have is Jace, Unraveler of Secrets. He's a 3 blue-blue with Planeswalker Jace with 5 loyalty counters. For +1, he scries 1, then draws a card.
Yes.
For -2, he returns a creature to its owner's hand. And for -8... you get an emblem with whenever an opponent casts his or her first spell each turn, counter that spell.
Oh god, this ultimate. Because of this, I want to build a Super Friends deck with Doubling Season. Just to be like, nope.
It brings back bad memories of...
Eraio and his essence.
Yes.
That card was banned for good reason, although for this one you actually have to work a lot. Or have a Doubling Season out. So it's not as oppressive.
Yeah.
So thumbs up or thumbs down with this Jace in EDH?
In EDH? Well, it's a thumbs up. I'd play him.
It's a decent card.
He bounces. He can bounce twice without dying.
He also scries, which is really good.
And draws a card.
Yep.
Which is like the best keyword in Magic.
Best,
draw a card.
Best three words in Magic. Draw a card. And the emblem is, if you ever get it, oh god, for your opponents. And it's...
for your friendships.
You were playing blue. You were kind of banking on not having friends.
Oh, that's right.
Plus the art is super sweet.
Yeah, but the shadows on his face, you just... Whenever I look at him, he looks like he has a mustache, and I just can't unsee it, and it's unsettling. I don't know. It's
I don't
weird.
Mind it. I don't mind it. I wouldn't mind if he went for a full beard.
He would look more evil.
He would look more Innistrad with a beard. Plus, the gear that he's wearing now, he should wear that all the time. Not that anime guy getup that he usually has.
Yeah, I guess he's just really into anime.
I mean, I'm a guy who really likes coats, so I'm kind of biased in this occasion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you noticed.
Yes.
But yeah, I want this Planeswalker for most of my blue decks, because he does a lot.
He does what? Yeah, he does. He draws cards and he bounces threats. That's what the Mind Sculptor did, but Mind Sculptor is better because he does more than that, and That's why we don't talk about Mind Sculptor.
I mean, Mind Sculptor is broken as hell. Not in EDH, though. Not in EDH. Because in EDH is really easily regulated.
Yeah, and this one is just fair. Let's just say he's fair.
He doesn't paint a huge target right away on your forehead. No.
He just draws a card. Nobody minds you drawing a card.
And you maybe be able to bounce that huge creature that's been oppressing everybody. Like that Elish Norn and something like that. So people will
go so you bounce that Elish Norn so your guys can live.
And everybody else is on the table and they're like, oh, wait, this Planeswalker ain't too bad. Let's keep him for a while.
Yeah, and then he starts making so much card advantage that everybody says, damn, we should have gotten rid of him.
Ah, by then it's too late.
Yes.
Either you die or your Planeswalker die or your enemies die. Actually not die, they just get their first spell countered. Wow, why did they put that ultimate? I mean, I don't mind it, but wow.
I guess they really want to give the EDH players back that ability.
I'm really grateful for that, but still.
Oh, well.
Well, my blue itch has been scratched by this card a bit. And now
and
we have
normally,
that'll be it with the Planeswalkers.
Yes, because it's the first set. It's a big one. So, yeah, three Planeswalkers it is. But
we're back to Innistrad. We can't do things small.
Nope. Going big or going home?
Well, I know who came home back. That'll be Soren, the Grim Nemesis. He's Planeswalker Soren for white, black and four. 6 loyalty. +1, reveal the top card of your library and put that card into your hand. Each opponent loses life equal to its converted mana cost. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a +1 that this Planeswalker has to have because it's 6 mana. It's a huge investment.
Yes.
You have to do something with it.
And this does something.
It's especially good when you combine it with Liliana Vess and her -2.
Yes, yes.
Okay, I guess I'll go search my huge Bloody Beater for, like, let's say, some kind of Eldrazi. Oh, you lose 12 life. Sorry.
Oh, he enters the battlefield. Oh, I have Lightning Greaves. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm not.
No, you're not.
-X. Soren Grim Nemesis deals X damage to target creature or Planeswalker and you gain X life. He really doesn't like certain Planeswalkers entering his plane.
But he also doesn't mind them because he's just so badass that he doesn't care.
Depends on the Planeswalker.
Yeah.
If it's a certain for 2 red and white that we just covered. Oh, but this is a good ability. It protects him, it protects you a bit.
Yeah.
And you can just remove a Planeswalker you mind. With 6 loyalty, you can actually do a lot of damage to an opposing Planeswalker.
Yeah, it's 6. In the worst case scenario, it's 6 mana for drain 6.
I mean, if you have to do that, you're really hard-pressed, but still.
It's a good swing.
It's a good swing. And -9, put the number of 1/1 Black Vampire Knight creature tokens with lifelink onto the battlefield, equal to the highest life total among all players. Wow.
I'm just going to say that his +1 is better than his -9.
That's a point. That's a legit point.
Because his -9 just makes 1/1 dudes. I just don't.
I mean, Stormherd is a good card.
Yeah, but it's just not that amazing.
It's not, but if you have a haste enabler, I mean.
I'm just not really sold on that ability.
But again, you're not using him because of his -9.
Yeah, again, you're using him for his +1.
But it'll make some really sweet plays when you have a haste enabler and you manage to ultimate him. And have some kind of anthem.
Or if you have a sacrifice outlet and you have blood artist and then
something like that, yeah.
Kill people.
Something like that. I mean, you can do both, I guess.
that actually just outright kills people, because you have more life than they do. You get more guys than they have life, and you sacrifice them all, and people just die.
Yeah, but you can do fancy things like attack and seeing how they block, and then starting sacrificing, just to give them a little shovel of hope.
Yeah.
As you can see, I like to play blue. So, yay or nay on Destiny DH?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It gives card advantage while putting pressure.
Yeah.
You can finish, maybe even finish a game with his minus X.
Or with plus one. Because it's each opponent. Yeah. It's each opponent. When I seen six men, I was like, okay, they better do something good, but the plus one was really, oh, good grief. He doesn't even need an ultimate.
No. You just plus one him until people die.
Yes. So, this is all from the Planeswalker section.
Yeah, now we can see... Well, now we can look at everything else. But so, since we have, like, a lot of them, we'll just cover some of the most exciting ones. Or worth mentioning.
I mean, whatever tickles are fancy, I guess.
Yeah.
So, what do you see first? Why don't we cover Olivia first? Because she's a legendary creature and EDH and all that.
Oh, yeah. She's a potential commander.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Depends. I mean, let's read her first and then...
Yeah. So, Olivia Mobilized for War.
First of all, what the hell is that name? What the hell is that name?
Yeah, it's Olivia and she's mobilized for war. What did you expect? Okay.
Anyhow,
she's a 1 black and a red for a 3/3 flying vampire knight. And she has, whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may discard the card. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on that creature. It gains haste until end of turn, and it becomes a vampire in addition to its other types. So, it's a new Marchesa toy.
Yeah.
It's actually absurd in Marchesa.
Yeah, it is. Anything that gives +1/+1 in the counters in those colors, it's really good with her.
And it gives haste.
Yeah.
So you get to smash faces immediately.
Yeah, plus she has a discard outlet. It is tied with you getting creatures into play, but it doesn't say non-token.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She can give haste to everything. Yeah. As long as you have cards in your hand.
Yeah. And you're playing black, so you most likely will.
And you're also playing her in Marchesa, most likely.
Even if you're having her as a general deck, because why not? You still have access to black, so you can really refill your hand really easily.
Yeah, but I'd rather have more smaller dudes, more, you know, like 4-cost dudes to follow up her casting. So I wouldn't really focus too much on the card draw, just the smashing of the faces.
Oh, why would you? I always concentrate on the card draw, because you kind of need it in four-man game. But still, smashing face is really good.
Oh, no, if you kill them fast enough, then not having a hand doesn't matter.
That's a legit point. And now, why isn't Olivia 2/3 so I could play her in Alesha? Damn it. I mean, I could still play her in Alesha. Because this card. And +1/+1.
That actually works good with Alesha.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get her, actually.
This even works for, you know...
A huge array of
turn decks. Three, you can turn 3 Olivia, and then turn 4 Alesha, and get
something.
No, actually, that.
Oh, would... I can always put Anger in my graveyard or Filth.
Yeah, but you need like 5 mana so you can Alesha and use her ability.
If I put Anger or Filth in my graveyard, I'm not getting them back to attack.
That is true.
So. Okay, she's becoming more and more better, more that I see her. Wow. I saw the spoiler, I disregarded it for a bit, but now that I think about it, wow.
It's a really good addition to...
It's a good card. Although, it is a bit nerfed because she doesn't have a huge dong anymore. Unlike Olivia Voldaren. And
Oliver Voldaren.
And what the hell is wrong with her sword? You don't use sword like that. It doesn't have structural integrity needed to, you know, battle people.
I think she's more like... She's just there to inspire.
But still...
And to encourage blood frenzy amongst her people.
Eh.
More than she's going to hit people.
And what is she fighting against? Angels, I guess?
We will see, actually, in this... But...
Let's...
Yeah, I just don't know about the story yet. I mean, the angels are killing people, but... I didn't really see them so really mad at vampires. So
I mean, I guess if somebody came and started hitting your stake, you would be angry?
We'll see why she's mobilized for war.
Let's move on with the spoiler, I guess. Should we talk about Relentless Dead, the thing we talked about last week for length, and then...
Did we talk about...
Oh, yes.
We talked about last week. Oh.
Yeah, because the episode got lost because something, and yeah.
Well, yeah, well, we... Pardon.
And then he died.
No, sorry, I choked on the sheer value this card presents. So, let's just say quickly what it does. So, Relentless Dead is a 2-black, 2/2 zombie with menace that has, when it dies, you may pay 1 black... And if you do, you return it to your hand. Okay? But also, when it dies, you may play X. You may pay X. And if you do, return another target zombie creature card with converted mana cost X from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Oh, God. Zombie decks got such huge boost with this. He does everything.
Yeah, he's like a Snapcaster zombie.
And it's a 2/2 for 2 mana.
That can block.
Yes. It doesn't happen often, and it broke through the Cathedral from the Endless Ranks of the Dead.
Yeah, so he is persistent.
But it took them, what, a year to break through that window?
It took them quite some time.
I mean, it's zombies, so they most likely have been smashing their head against the wall.
The guy is really good. He can, there's some serious combo potential for him. I don't think there's infinite combo, but he's menace, so you have to block him with 2 guys. So
speaking of zombies and infinite combos, Diagraph Colossus has been spoiled today.
Yes, and I just wanted to mention him as another really good addition to zombie.
This is
decks.
Even better, I think, because for 2 and a black, it's a creature zombie. It enters the battlefield with a +1/+ counter for each zombie card in your graveyard, and he's a 2/2. So if you don't have anything, he's still 2/2. Whenever you cast a zombie spell, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield tapped. So basically, Gravecrawler, Phyrexian, Altar, and him. You sacrifice Gravecrawler to get the black mana, then get it back. And do that infinite time.
Right.
You do that infinite times on somebody's end step, and there you go.
You have a lot of dudes.
You have infinite amount of dudes and kill people.
Oh, and I have to say that the art looks very Dark Soulish.
Yes.
Looks like a boss from Dark Souls.
Yeah, you would most likely die to it like 7 times and then finally figure it out.
Yeah, just like in Commander, where he's going to probably kill you once and then you're going to learn that you don't leave this guy alive.
You just exile
ever.
Him. Exile him.
Yeah, the moment you can. Because if you kill him, you know what's going to happen?
It's a zombie deck. It's going to come back.
Relentless Dead is going to get him back.
Yes.
That's what's going to happen.
Such a huge boost, goddammit.
Makes you wanna just make
Grimgrin.
Zombie deck.
Grimgrin. Zombie commander. Just make a Grimgrin.
But these guys are also standard playable. Really
yeah.
good. So that's a problem.
That's a problem for what, about a year and a half.
Yeah.
We're commander players. We can wait. Yeah. We can wait. Yeah. Oh, next card I want to talk about is Descent Upon the Sinful.
Mm.
First thing I want to talk about is not the card itself, but it was mistranslated on French. And it was Descent Upon the Fishers because of the French language. So it turns out that Everson really hates poachers.
Oh.
Above all cries, the phrase rang out, you will not fish. But for real, it's a sorcery for 4 white and white. Exile all creatures, this is already good.
Yes.
It also has Delirium. Put a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying onto the battlefield if you have 4 or more card types among cards in your hand. In graveyard.
So it's just a Final Judgment that...
With an upside.
Yeah, that's... Good. Final Judgment is already good.
It's really, really good.
Especially when you have those, when you have some players that just managed to activate 3 Theros gods, and they're all like happy they're going to attack everyone with them, and there nobody can do anything about that, and then just, yeah, they're exiled. They're indestructible, but that doesn't matter.
They just went to another plane to frolic and have a party.
Yeah. They're not destroyed, they're just not...
Yeah, EDH needed more Final Judgment effects, and it might drive the price of Final Judgment a bit down. It's a like $4 card, but it might get a little less, like $3 or $2.
Yeah, because this is actually strictly better.
This is strictly better, yeah. But it's really worse than the art section. Because the
Final Judgment has just the best art.
Yeah, Okagachi, you can't beat that. The huge dragon, oh god.
Speaking of exile effects, there's this one removal, single target, that's actually absurd. I think it's going to be a staple in Commander.
Read it.
Anguished Unmaking is an instant for 1 white and a black. It says, exile target non-land permanent, you lose 3 life.
Yeah.
And that's it. Nothing else. You just... There's a problem on the table. Unmake it. Unmake it. And I'm not talking about that unmaking from Shadowmoor.
Even though unmake is good.
Yeah, but this just removes anything. Oh, that planeswalker's making problems. Unmake it. That enchantment's a problem. Not a problem anymore.
Yeah.
Creatures. Nope. Go away.
And you just lose 3 life.
That's nothing. You're playing black and white. You're gonna get it back.
I wouldn't care even if I don't get it back, honestly.
It's like utter end, but better.
Yeah.
Because it's 3 mana.
I mean,
I know a lot of situations where I really wish that utter end was 3
yeah,
mana.
Yeah, yeah. Plus it has a really sweet art and flavor text.
The art is just... the feels.
Yeah, poor Everson is getting banished. To the Shadow Realm.
Poor Sorin is forced to do it.
I mean, she was...
Sorin is getting a lot of...
And by the way, I did...
crap lately.
I did say in the episode 2 that never got published that Everson is having data issues. You see that she is.
She was like, oh my god, Dad, it's not just a phase. This is who I am.
Something like that. She was like, okay, go to your room. Just go. Turns out her room is somewhere in the exile zone.
Yeah.
But
I'm seeing this. This anguished unmaking a lot of Avacyns in Commander also.
As it should, because screw that card.
And even the abbreviation for the card, AU, the card is solid gold.
Yeah. This will be a staple for years to come.
Definitely.
In a lot of formats, so get this while you can, and if you can, get the Sweet Game Day champion promo. Yeah. I mean, Tomei. Full art.
It's full art feels.
Yep. It doesn't have the flavor text, but you know. Oh, it's full art. We forgot about one more legendary creature we should talk about.
Certain angel.
Yeah, Sigarda Heron's Grace, which is a bit weaker now that she's mad, but she's 4/5 for 3 green and white. She's a legendary creature angel because, of course, she is. She has flying, and you and human creatures, humans you control have hexproof. 2 exile card from your graveyard, put a 1/1 white human soldier creature token onto the battlefield.
Yeah, she is. Just going to say she's not mad. She is actually going to probably lead the.
She's mad at her sisters.
Yeah, she's mad at her sisters. She's not mad as in kill all humans mad.
This is an okay support card, but not as good as a card as her previous version.
Yeah, I thought it gave you and your creatures hexproof. But, yeah, giving only you and
humans you control.
She loses hexproof, and that's actually, that's big for her.
Plus that other ability that she had. What, you can't make me sacrifice things? Oh well, so...
Yeah, but to be honest, most things that made you sacrifice targeted you, so this one actually also protects you from sacrifice effects.
Yeah, but she's not protected, so...
But she no longer protects herself.
Yeah, and her second ability, I wish it was from any graveyard.
That would be really... I think that would be too good.
I wouldn't mind it if they made her like this for 6 mana and that effect. Or 4/4 for 6 mana and that effect.
Yeah, but she like this, she's probably more pushed towards
standard. Yeah.
Because in standard, they're going to need really good graveyard hate because of, you know, Restless Dead.
Yeah.
Damn that card.
Oh, it's so good.
It's too good.
I wouldn't say too good, but it's really, really, really good. Anything else caught your fancy?
Well, we have a sweet French land.
Oui.
We have translation, so... Let's say it's West Vale Abbey. It's a land that taps to add colorless to your mana pool. You can pay 5, tap it, and pay 1 life to put a 1/1 white and black human cleric token onto the battlefield.
Wow.
Or you can pay 5, tap it, and sacrifice 5 creatures to transform the land and untap it.
And it turns into what?
And it turns into...
Ormendal,
Profane Prince. And it's a 9/7 legendary creature demon with flying, lifelink, indestructible, and haste.
You know, what do I see in this art? I see Prosh flying somewhere in behind. How easy
what,
is it to
just because do? You can just like play Prosh next turn, I get a 9/7
big
demon.
Yes, that's why.
Yeah, also, this card is going straight into my Shirei, Shizu's Caretaker Commander. Because why not get more sacrifice outlets for my useless 1/1 guys that will return?
Plus 9/7 for 5 mana is really good with flying, lifelink, indestructible haste. I wish they gave her all the Akroma stuff, honestly, just to make fun of it. See Akroma, how far you've fallen. This is good.
Yeah, this is decent, yes.
This is really good. I mean, you don't have a downside for playing this as your land in your Black X deck. You can always get a guy for a lot of mana, but still.
And it comes untapped, so...
Yeah.
That's good, yeah.
And it's a sacrifice outlet, so it's okay in that regard.
So, anything else worth mentioning?
Drown Your Temple is interesting, actually. So it's a land, it can tap for one colorless mana to your mana pool, and for three you can return it from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped.
So if you discard it, you can actually ramp with it.
Something like that, yeah. Or you can, you know, sacrifice it, somehow get a 5-3 elemental, then get it back again. With a certain commander that does that. Or, you know, a certain angry omelet that likes getting land into play.
Yeah, you just get things to... You just need a way to sacrifice lands. That's normal. That's easy to find. You get your mana echoes, and you get your Droneyard Temple, and you can just kill people.
There is another interesting card. It's an uncommon. It's Rise from the Tides. For 5 and a blue, it's a sorcery. Put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield for each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard. Mizzix of the Ace Magnus much?
Yeah, I mean, this card is actually... The effect isn't very... I would say it was rare.
It looks like a rare, yeah. But it is...
You can get a lot of zombies this way.
Yeah, you play one blue mana in Mizzix to, you know, get a lot of zombies and carry on.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have actually...
Enter untapped.
Yeah, and now you have guys to actually win the game with if you can't combo off. Which is nice.
Yep.
They also spoiled one of the guild gates.
The guild gates?
Yeah, it's not a guild gate, but it comes into battlefield tapped and taps for one of two mana.
Oh yeah, they spoiled 5 of those.
But do the arts seem kind of familiar to you?
Well,
does it look familiar?
No, looking at it like this, no.
Remember those check lines when they come into play? They checked if you have, let's say, for the first one, a swamp or plains. Actually, no. This is the one that I have to correct myself. The one that you pay 2 black and white tap it to get your creature's lifelink and death touch.
Hmm.
What's it called? You know the art.
Yeah, Vault of the Archangel.
Yes, but look at it. Now compare it with the Vault of the Archangel. It's the same thing, but now it's really crumpled up and destroyed.
And now it gives colored mana.
Yeah, it doesn't have an effect because people are not using it, I guess, but it has mana.
But this cycle of these new tap lands, I mean, it's always nice to have more budget mana fixing.
I honestly prefer to run basics over this. If it gave life...
Just because they didn't give life?
No, if they gave life when they came into play, yes, I would play it. But this doesn't have that much of an upside.
Yeah, but I believe that is because this is the cycle they started in Oath of the Gatewatch.
Yeah. That's right.
It's the lands that have generic names, so they can put it in any set they want.
I'm talking about in EDH. I wouldn't run this unless you're in 5 colors and really need fixing.
I would run them in 2-color decks.
In 2-color decks, you're not so hard-pressed to actually get that mana, so you can run basics.
Nah, man. More colored mana.
But it comes into play tapped.
Huh?
And if
you
tap them. And speaking of basics, we have the Warped Landscape. You can
The what?
Warped Landscape. It's a common from this set. You can tap it to get one colorless mana pool or two and sacrifice it to get a basic land and put it on the battlefield tapped.
Yeah, so it's like a Thermorphic Expanse that gives mana.
Yeah, so you can outplay if you need the mana now, or you need to ramp. Or actually fix your mana.
Yeah, it's a good, yeah.
It's cute for a common.
Yeah. I don't really see it outright replacing Thermorphic Expanse in Evolving Wilds.
I would play it with in addition to. Because there was a lot of times I wanted to put Thermophoric Expanse into play and tap it for mana. Just because I need mana right now. And I don't mind, what is this, Wayfarer's Bauble effect, right?
Yes.
I don't mind playing Wayfarer's Bauble in my decks. I actually pretty like that card, so...
Yeah.
And I was actually going to get like 4 or 5 copies of this.
For all the decks?
Yes, I can replace the Wayfarer's Bauble or play it in addition with.
It's a common, you'll have more than you can handle.
It'll be $1 for 4 or 5 of them, so it's really not that big of an issue.
Yeah.
I love searching for basics. Basics are really good.
I would like to mention another card.
Yeah?
That I don't really know if it's going to be really good or just really bad, but it's just so amazing. I just have to talk about it. Startled Awake is a 2 generic and double blue for a sorcery. Target opponent puts the top 13 cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard because it's Innistrad, so 13.
As a mill player, I'm already sold. Okay, I'll take it.
It has another effect. For 3 and 2 blue, you put Startled Awake from your graveyard onto the battlefield transformed. But you can only activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery.
Because of course.
Sad face.
I mean, it makes sense.
Its transformed version is Persistent Nightmare. And it becomes a creature nightmare 1/1 with Skulk, meaning it can't be blocked by creatures with greater power. And when Persistent Nightmare deals combat damage to a player, return it to its owner's hand. It's the... So you can mill him for 13 again.
But the combination of art and the names of the card and flavor text...
The flavor is just amazing.
It seems so real. And look at the art. The boy is haunting that girl.
You know, this boy reminds me of another ghost boy from Mass Effect 3.
Oh, you know whom he reminds me of? That pair of children from Origins, whenever you play an enchantment.
The dead children. Oh.
Yeah. It seems something like that.
No, those are benevolent spirits.
They might have turned malevolent because of the whole Everson thing.
I just want to get an altered Startled Awake with Shepherd and that boy here. You can just alter the woman in the picture into Shepherd or Femshep.
Yeah.
You're into that. And it's just that the boy looks really similar to that one.
And it's a really cool card. It's not really good that much.
Yeah, it's like 9. It's like you need to spend 9 mana and 2 turns so you can get an additional mill 13.
But I want to do it because it's so cool.
Yeah, it's going to be absolutely gorgeous foil.
Oh god, yes. I want the foil of this so hard.
But it's a mythic.
It's a mythic. I mean, it's going to be a dollar rare. Let's face it.
It's going to be a bulk mythic, but it's not going to be it's not going to be very common to find foil mythics.
Still, it's so gorgeous.
But we don't have any expeditions to get in our way.
Yeah.
Those pesky expeditions not giving us foil mythics. Darn them.
Oh, there is another card that got spoiled today that doesn't seem too bad in Mizzix, I guess. Or things like that. Trail of Evidence. You said we were going to do a lot of investigating. So, for 1 and blue.
I'm investigating.
Yeah. Enchantment. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, investigate.
And that's it.
That's it. That's...
But still, I don't really... know about this one, because isn't there a blue version that says whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you may pay 1, and if you do, you draw a card?
There is the one that gives you whenever any player casts a spell, you may cast two, and then you draw a card, or any opponent draws a card. There is a thing that whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, you scry if you pay one mana. And there is the Jace's Sanctum that lets you play them cheaper and scry whenever you do that. But this is just, you know, investigate.
So it's... Yeah, you can get a lot of artifacts and then later cash them in.
Yeah.
I mean...
It's not bad.
It might be fun with better... If there is some, like, clue support.
I mean, there was that... Tamiyo's Journal that allows you to tutor.
If you sacrifice five...
No, three.
Three clues, yeah.
Three clues. So that ain't too bad, I guess.
Yeah, that could... Maybe that combo might make...
I mean, I don't mind Tamiyo's Journal in decks that don't have that much tutoring. And it's not that bad on itself because it gives you card draw at the beginning of your upkeep. Still, Venser's Journal was much better than Tamiyo's, but still.
But, you know, there might be some more clue support. Because based on this one, uncommon... Daring Sleuth, that is for one in blue, a 2/1 creature, human rogue, that has when you sacrifice a clue, you transform him, and he becomes a 3/2 bearer of overwhelming truths.
That's human such a badass wizard. Name. That's such a badass name, by the way. Yeah.
With prowess, and whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you investigate.
Oh, yeah. By the way, you were talking about foils. Imagine how this foil is going to look like.
Pretty good.
Yeah, it looks really bloodborne-y. Look at it.
You know what?
Hmm?
Actually, the first thing this card reminded me of was Darkest Dungeon.
Yeah, the arts are similar.
It's like the flavor text is, no matter the cost, I must discover the source of these strange happenings. It's like that when you have an adventure with... that just has to investigate every pile of books you come across. Then he goes to investigate it, and then he goes insane. <That's>...
Yeah, but I like that this guy doesn't turn into some huge monstrosity.
Yeah, he doesn't go insane. He actually goes and finds more clues for you.
And then he becomes a wizard for some reason.
And he gets buffed from playing spells.
He gets buffed because he's seen some things. I was going to say another word, but we're trying to stay a bit PG-13-ish, so...
Yeah.
I mean, you can swear if you want, I just... I'm trying to dial it down a bit while I'm podcasting, so...
Yeah.
Oh, another fun spell. Epiphany at the Drown Yard. It's rare. Yeah, X and blue, instant, reveal top X cards plus one card of your library, and separate them into two piles. An opponent chooses one of those piles... Put that pile into your hand and the other into your graveyard. It's Team Augury on steroids if you pay a lot of mana into it.
Yeah, at first I confused it with the Factor Fiction effect. And I was just amazed by it.
That would be so good.
But this is not as good, but still really good. I mean, it's X.
Yeah, so Mizzix again?
Again, yeah. But I can actually see it in any blue deck.
By the way, look at the art of Epiphany Drownyard, and then look at Drownyard Temple.
Yeah, because...
Yeah.
It's the Drownyard.
I want to know...
Apparently Jace was searching for a Drownyard.
Yeah, and he found it, and he found something at it. And I want to know what
something is being summoned from it.
It seems like that.
And I really hope something... That something will be revealed...
I know
soon
that
enough.
Whenever whatever is getting summoned is heretical, so... Come on,
what,
you know...
Burn it?
You know, it's... Of course you burn it. I mean, it's Innistrad. You burn most of the things. Because they're going to kill you.
Yeah, plus whatever is at the bottom of that lake is probably the reason for all the insanity.
Yeah... I think that's that huge lizard thing, legendary, the one that they said they were going to spoil soon.
They did?
Yeah, it's a huge toad-looking thing that has an arm coming out of its mouth.
So it's going to be a giant frog.
Something like that, or a lizard or something like that.
No. We need legendary frogs.
Of course we
Frog
do.
tribal commander. Let's do it.
All hail the Hypnotoad.
Yes.
Oh, and we forgot the one really, really badass general. Odric the Lunar Marshal. I love this guy. For
Really?
three, for three and white. He's a human soldier. Legendary creature, of course. At the beginning of each combat step, creatures you control gain first strike until the end of turn if a creature you control has first strike. The same is true for flying, death touch, double strike, haste, hexproof, indestructible, lifelink, menace, reach, skulk, trample, and vigilance.
So every known till
Yeah.
now.
I mean, it's kind of egg that it triggers only on beginning of combat, but it makes sense in as you know.
But it's the beginning of each
Yeah,
combat.
yeah. And you may just put concerted effort into that with him and just, you know, have all of the keywords.
All the time, yeah.
But
One
yeah.
of the best, combinations I imagine would be double strike, trample, and death touch.
Yep. And it's easy to accomplish. You just put equipment on any of your creatures.
Yeah.
And he doesn't need to be attacking to do that.
Nope. But he really works really well with his first version.
Oh, yes. Also, do you know the card called Abu Javari or something like that from Arabian Nights?
No.
So basically, whenever he gets blocked at the end of combat, destroy all creatures that were blocked or he blocked at the end of combat. So basically, with the old Odric, you're like, okay, everybody, charge that guy. Except for you, Abu Jafar, I have a special mission for you. Everybody's going to block you.
Yeah.
And then you just make him indestructible with the new Odric, I guess.
Or what I like to do is just attack with Stuffy Doll, and everything blocks Stuffy Doll.
I need to put Odric, the old one, into more of my decks, I think.
Yeah, he's a fun guy.
He's a fun guy. So, anything else we actually want to discuss? Anything that's fun?
We discussed Brain in a Jar in our first episode,
Yeah,
because
yeah.
it was a brain in a jar.
It's such a good card. It's not a good card, but it's such a good card.
It's so fun.
Yeah, it's
Instant
flavorful.
speed spore sorceries,
And
that's.
why it isn't a legendary creature is beyond me. I'm
What
not
else?
seeing
What else? What
I'm not seeing anything else really fun. I see a
I
lot of.
mean.
Oh, Sinister Concoction. I think that'll be the last card we talk about.
Yeah, we're really pushing the time on this episode.
I mean, I know podcasts that do it for like 3 hours, so this is nothing. So, Sinister Concoction for one black mana. It's an enchantment. Black, play one life. Put the top card of your library into your graveyard. Discard a card. Sacrifice this enchantment. Destroy the other creature. An old family recipe for an old family grudge.
This card is so, like, it's so cool.
You know what's the best part of it? You just play it on your first turn, and you're like, okay, yeah, you play a creature. Any creature you want. Sure thing. You just
Yeah,
go. It's so.
just.
Start standing there as a threat.
You just put one of everything into this mixture and then you throw that mixture at
Yeah,
something.
yeah. Plus,
Then they die.
it
Yay!
does a lot you want to do in EDH in black. Put the top card of your library into your graveyard. It might be a huge creature. Why not? Discard a card. It'll be a huge creature, most likely. And then you also kill a thing.
And it also enables Delirium if
Yeah.
Delirium becomes
Yeah.
really relevant for Commander.
I mean, it is for some cards.
Yeah.
Plus, I really like Seal of Doom and such things that just stand there.
Of political cards.
Yeah, I mean, you can play a huge beater, why not? But you know, it'll die.
Oh. There's this one, another one card that is just absolutely amazing for Commander.
Yeah?
Harness the Storm.
Oh god, though. No. I
It's
thought you.
two for a red for an enchantment that says whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell from your hand, you may cast target card with the same name as that spell from your graveyard.
You still have to pay the cost.
You still have to pay the cost, yes.
I mean, you can play it in Ravenous Threats. Oh, wait.
Relentless.
Okay, let's just... This isn't the card you want to be playing in Commander. I mean, you can play it just to confuse your opponents, I guess. They'll be like, you don't want
there
to mess with this guy, he's crazy.
There must be some way to get this to work.
There isn't, I think. No.
Because target card... Well, let's think about this. Let's say you're allowed to play unhinged cards. And let's just say you can play that shapeshifter that has no name. You just give him a name for mana. And if you can give him a name in his... Well, it's in your graveyard. You can cast him, because it doesn't say you can cast the same. Because it says you may cast target card, not instant or sorcery. So yeah, it can work. It can work.
Are you stretching it a bit?
It's going to snap how hard I'm stretching it.
Yeah. So I think we're done with the spoilers now. It's taken us a long time, but I don't mind because there was a lot of good things in this spoiler.
There's like more stuff, but
mostly it's limited filler. So. Yeah. Or, you know, 2-1 vampires for red mana and things like that. That are not relevant to the format.
Not this one.
I sent a link into the Skype chat. I want to talk about the Isabel the Angel.
Yeah? What about
her? You remember Angel of Finality? I mean, Angel of Flight Alabaster from original Innistrad.
Yes.
So turns out her name was Isabel. Then later, the same artist made Angel of Finality, you know, the one when she comes into play, you remove a graveyard from the game.
Yeah.
And then they printed Flameblade Angel, they were printed in the set.
Mm-hmm.
Then she became insane with, you know, because of the old things that humans were doing.
Because of Avacyn.
Yeah, and then Clip the Wings, it's the same angel that they're killing. So, her story has spanned for 6 years through the sets. And I just love it.
Yeah, and you can see it in the art from, like, a graceful angel that just descended into madness.
Yeah, first she's sad because of the old death that's going around her, then she decided to protect the graveyards from those that want to defile them, and then she became really, really insane.
And then she got
killed. Then the humans had to, you know, put her down. It's a really sad story, but a really flavorful one, and I really love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a cool story, and you know, Innistrad has more of these stories.
That's what I love.
Like the Aberrant Researcher. That's
A
continuation from the. The Devil of Secrets. After he transformed, he just continued his research, and now he managed to reach his final form, his perfected form. And you know, the Relentless Dead that managed to break through the glass. I'm sure there are more stories like this.
Yeah, Innistrad was always a huge flavorful set, and I really loved it for it. I'm a huge Vortas, so more flavor is better in my mind.
Yeah, we're not even close to halfway.
Yeah. So, since we're running at 1 hour and 20 minutes, you wanna do the topic that we did last time that we have to repeat this week, or do you wanna do it next week?
I think we should do it next week, so we keep the podcast, you know, short and sweet.
I don't mind talking about magic for hours and hours. But,
maybe people won't listen for hours and hours.
With podcasts, that's what you do, I mean.
I like to keep it on a shorter episode.
No problem. So you have our contact information, and actually my contact information in the show notes.
Yeah, I don't have any contact information.
Nick Show doesn't want to give you because he's a secluded guy.
I just only have Facebook, and I don't even use it.
I mean, you use it mostly to communicate with me, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, sadly, that's what my Facebook has gone to. Just seeing the spoilers and talking to Nick Show, when are we going to play / record next time?
And talk about new decks and what sick, disgusting things we're going to do.
Just plain stupid.
Yeah, like...
Oh yeah,
splashing red to play Arlene Court in my modern Eldrazi.
I don't think you should do that still, but you know.
I'm not, because I was talking to a guy about this idea.
Yeah.
And then the more I talked to him about it, the more I realized how stupid it was.
Yeah, it is. The more.
So I just had to continue talking to him to convince myself not to do it.
Yeah. Ever. It's a good card, but it's not a Tron card.
It might be. Damn it, now I need to talk to someone.
I mean, please, listeners, send messages or comment on the episode just to show Niksha that it's not a good thing.
But I have thought Seers. No.
And yeah, I just want to mention the blunder I did yesterday when I was playing against the Prosh deck. So, I have 4 mana open, and my second main phase at a side, you know what, I'm at 5 life, but I'm going to put in Brian Stoutarm, it'll get me to the next turn. Well, I forgot that she had Kolag on the Storm's Fury in her hand. I didn't have any flyers. You know what else I had in my hand? A Terminate.
Which you had no mana to cast.
I would have if I was like, should I keep the Terminate mana open or not? And no.
Nah, what's the worst that can
happen? I'll get 7 more tokens to assemble the Legion. I'll get to kill her next turn. Turns out there was no next turn. I was sad.
Yeah.
So yeah, kids, whenever you're playing, just think about it.
Yeah, try to remember last turn, and not just your turn.
No, it wasn't last turn, it was like 3 or 4 turns before, but things happened. And I even wouldn't be dead if the Krenko player didn't, out of spite, deal me like 20-30 damage with his tokens.
So that's what Krenko players do.
He was at 1 life, and he decided, you know, just to kingmake the game.
Can't blame him.
I don't like king making, but still, it was just a game, so I'm really not having any hard feelings. So, that has been episode 2.5.
Thank you for listening.
All the three of you. And
what?
That's me being optimistic, you know.
Uh-huh.
And as for every week, the Emperor protects.
Blood for the Blood God.
Don't do it again.